Great to have you along here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. And tell you what, some people, whether you know them personally or not, you feel like an old and trusted friend. And I knew George Vukelic. He was one of those people that a lot of people didn't know him personally, but they knew him kind of from his work on the air and from his writing. He was a wonderful writer, and he was a good friend of mine. And he and I did many a program together, and I always enjoyed listening to him and enjoyed his presence. He was a wonderful man, and his passed away some time ago now. But he wrote a great book, a book that I wish I had read at the time it came out, and I don't know why I didn't. No idea. It's called Fisherman's Beach, and it's been re-released. This is 50 years after its publication, and great to have with me in the studio Vince Vukelic, George's son, and who works actually in the Office of General Counsel for the USDA in Milwaukee. And Vince, great to meet you, and thanks so much for coming.
Oh, it's an honor to be here, Larry. Thank you very much.
Appreciate it very much. Also with us by phone, Doug Moe, who's been a guest on this program quite a few times, columnist for the Wisconsin State Journal, had a long history with George when they were both working for Madison Magazine. And Doug, great to have you with us, too. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
You bet, Larry. Glad to do it.
It's wonderful to have an excuse to talk about George, and that reason is release of his novel, Fisherman Beach. Doug, maybe you can talk first a little bit about how that came about.
Well, I got a phone call just a while back from a guy named Bob Wake. Bob has been in Madison for a long time in the literary scene, and he was a radio host himself years ago, and he said that he had been in university bookstore and come across a big table full of books that were all one title, and it was Fisherman's Beach by George, and it was actually the second. It was an edition that George himself brought out around 1990, and Bob knew who George was, but I don't think he knew about the novel, and I think he got in touch with Vince, and the denouement, as you've said, is that Bob Wake decided to bring it out here on the 50th anniversary of the original publication as an ebook, and he asked me if I would write an introduction, and I was thrilled to do it, and very happy. And I got to say, Larry, like you, a little bit embarrassed because I didn't know that George had written this novel, and I knew him pretty well. When I wrote my foreword, though, I went back and I noted that even in his glowing obituaries that ran in both Madison papers back in 1995 when George died, you know, as glowing as they were, neither one mentioned Fisherman's Beach. So yeah. We're not alone, and that is, I think, why this reissue is such a great thing.
Yeah, it's a special novel.
Oh, I think so. When Bob Wake decided to reissue, that gave me the opportunity to read it, and I spent a winter afternoon at a Panera Bread in a booth all by myself, and it took about 3.5 hours, and I was just George had me from the opening sentence. You know, it's a great story. It's written by somebody who knew what he was writing about. You know, all those years in the outdoors, you know, bearing fruit in George's art with a very, very good novel.
And Vince, it focuses on that, as we're kind of indicating here, on a fishing family dealing, and it also deals with the slow death of the patriarch and certainly of their livelihood as fishermen. What was it about a story like this that attracted your dad, do you think?
Well, I think if you read the book and you knew about my dad's career, his career on radio, the column North Country Notebook, what he did, and even his interview column that he did for Isthmus for years, listening in, he always was able to combine, I think, his love of the environment, love of the outdoors, but also a real interest in human stories and how that fit into the environment. The environment and for him, nature was not devoid of humans. They were a part of it. And I think what fascinated him about this story was not just, you have the sort of a number of battles going on or a number of conflicts going on, one between the old man and his oldest son, Germain, who's coming back, and he wants Germain to continue on. The battle between Germain and his brother, Roger. The growing up story of Reuben, who's the youngest. All of these very human stories about the family are intertwined into this bigger context of really the future of this fishing family and the future of the Fisherman's Beach and of many of the commercial fishermen on Lake Michigan is tied up into what really was an ecological disaster on Lake Michigan. And there's a sense of inevitability about it where all this is going on. There's, the battle between the fishermen and the state of Wisconsin over are the fishermen overfishing Lake Michigan. But ultimately, it's the lampreys at the end, something that no one has any control about. And what fascinates me about it, and I think what is very clear that my dad was always able to do, was to tie in these ecological stories, but in a human way. He didn't hit you over the head with any message. He just laid it out in a very artistic, method. But at the same time, it was something that you had to come to. He wasn't going to leave it out for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And Doug, that it's 50 years old, but I think what Vince is talking about here, these are issues that are pretty timeless.
Well, the environmental issues, certainly. And my goodness, the family, as Vince articulated, with the patriarch and the sons and their, very deep and interesting relationships. That goes back, ever since there have been people, I guess. So I'm curious if Vince knows why his dad never followed up on Fisherman's Beach with another novel, because that's one thing I don't know, and it was such a good book and pretty well received at the time. It got real good reviews from August Derleth, and it was a big New York publisher in 1962 with St. Martin's Press.
Yeah.
Well, I think if you look at the time, he had four daughters. This is 1962. I was 2 years away. And even on the back of the original book, which I have here, he basically says, I've become a split personality to further a writing career. Mm. His radio name was Papa Hambone. So he says, Papa Hambone buys the groceries, meets the mortgage payments, and maintains the menage. George V. Kellogg simply tries to write the best first novel of which he is capable. And there's an interview he did with Bob King, probably back in the 62 or 63 on WIBA, where he talks a little more about that.
Huh.
And one of the things he said there was that he loves writing. Obviously, writing is sort of his passion, but at the same time, it doesn't pay the bills. And what worked out for him very effectively was his radio job, where, as he's, again, quoting my dad, he said, being a DJ doesn't take much brain power, or at least the way I do it. And what he would do is he would be able to, spin his records, have people on the radio, and then he'd come home and spend some time with my mom. And then he would stay up late.
Sure.
And then in the morning, he'd wake up, and my mom, I was just talking to her this morning. Happy birthday, Mom, by the way. Mm-hmm. And she was saying that he would sit out there in the living room and look out and watch the birds. And I would sort of be sitting there watching our backyard on Plummer Circle and sort of getting that inspiration. And that was how he wrote the book. So I think if you, I always asked him, did you have a second book in line when I first found out that he had this book?
Mm-hmm.
And he never really said that this that would have been his goal. But I think really what came into it was family. I mean, he knew he wouldn't be able to support his family unless he looked at other opportunities. Plus, if you look at, he was becoming a more and more of a radio personality here in town. And he had the kind of an ideal gig, if you want to call it, where as opposed to now where sort of the format of radio stations is really the music, whatever format it is, and then the DJs are interchangeable parts, he came up at a time where the DJ was really kind of the king, and the radio station fit around that. And he was very you know, he had the ability to read poetry on his show, North Country Notebook, mm-hmm. which ended up being something that he wrote later on, was something he did on his radio show. He did, you know, really reporting. He had a show called Vietnam Seminar. Mm-hmm. He had 6 hours a night, 6 hours a night, Monday through Friday to fill. And he could do pretty much anything he wanted. And so I think as that went on and was able to pay the bills for his family, you know, unfortunately, you have to give up certain things. And I think that second novel would have been it.
Sure.
But I agree with you. I would have loved to have seen what his second novel would have been.
Yeah, me too. Jack in Madison, thanks for waiting. Hi.
Hi, I am just thrilled to have you broadcasting this program today, and I want to ask a question about the last letters from Stalingrad.
Yeah.
It was one of the traditions of the Christmas time that it was so moving and so touching, and I asked George once if he had recorded that, and he said no, he thought it was better and more fresh if he just did it, you know, off the cuff. But is there any
tell you what, we have a little clip of one, and we'll right after a look at the news at some point we have a little clip of George doing the last letters from Stalingrad. And we will put that up. Huh? What do you think of that, Jack? How's that for fast service? we'll do that. And of course, we'll continue to talk with Vince Ukalik and Doug Moll. And Helen, happy 84th birthday, by the way. She's a wonderful woman, too. We'll be back right after the news. Some people, whether you know them personally or not, feel like an old and trusted friend. And I know for a lot of people, George Ukalik was one of those. And for all of us who enjoyed listening to him and reading his writings, there's been a hole in our hearts since he passed on in 1995. Larry Mueller here. Glad you could join us today on the Ideas Network for a really special program. 2012 marks the 50th anniversary of the publication of George Ukalik's only novel, and happily, Fisherman's Beach has been re-released as an e-book for many more readers to discover. Maybe you have some favorite memories of George, or Papa Hambone, as many of us knew him. George's son, Vince Ukalik, columnist Doug Moll, with me today. Join in with your questions or comments or reminiscences at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org. And we'll be back right after the news. Often the people who touch the most lives are the last to realize the impact they have. And George Ukalik, I think, was certainly one of those people. Hi, Larry Mueller here. 2012 marks the 50th anniversary of the publication of George Ukalik's only novel. And happily, Fisherman's Beach has been re-released as an e-book for those who have read it or want to revisit it. It's for a whole new generation of readers to enjoy. We have two wonderful guests here to share their very special memories of George. Vince Ukalik, George's son, works in the Office of General Counsel for the USDA in Milwaukee. Vince, what a pleasure. Thank you so much for coming and being with us.
Thanks again, Larry.
Appreciate it very much. And Doug Moll, columnist for the Wisconsin State Journal, long history with George when they were both working for Madison Magazine. Doug, great to have you with us as well.
Thanks, Larry.
Appreciate it very much. And we have, Vince brought, we have four copies of the book, Fisherman's Beach.
Right. There are four copies. What happened is the book was published by St. Martin's Press in 1962. And then in the 80s, my dad had his North Country Notebook column, which was published in the Isthmus Weekly. And he ended up self-publishing his book, North Country Notebook, Volume 1 and 2. And as one of the things he decided to do with the press then was to re-release Fisherman's Beach. And so it's a paperback version, but it is self-published, you know.
And we have four copies that Vince has brought along that we're going to give to the next four people who call in with a question. So what will happen is Judith will be getting your address so that we can send it off to you. And the number to call, 1-800-642-1234, and Randy and Lynn are already online here, so they're probably going to be having a copy of that book. Randy, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Good afternoon. Great show. In fact, if I can just say this to the host, Mr. Mueller, I think you are the most underused on-air personality on Wisconsin Public Radio. And like these last two shows are attest to.
Well, thank you.
I have respect. I think you do a great job with the home repair shows and the veterinarian ones. But sometimes I'd like to see you do, I don't know if I should say more challenging, but things like this, because I think, like I say, I think you have talent that doesn't get exercised enough.
Well, thank you, Randy. Appreciate it.
Okay. And on the subject, a bunch of us were sitting around the Legion Hall the other night. We realized two things. We had two vague memories that we weren't sure about. And one is that I think there was an early review of the book that said it was pretty raw. I don't know if that meant language or maybe it was naturalistic in a way that you don't want your teenager to read. But I was wondering if you have any insight in what that refers to. I even wondered if that might have come from August Derleth. And so the second part of my question is, what was the personal and professional writing relationship between Mr. Derleth and George Kaler?
Go ahead.
Yeah, my mom would be able to answer the personal relationship more. I know my dad was a huge fan of August Derleth, and in North Country Notebook 1, he has kind of a reference to a number of the Hall of Fame of writers, and there's people like Calvin Rutstrom, people that Jerry Apps mentioned just earlier, Sigurd Olsen, and one of them was definitely August Derleth. It's interesting. The other thing I'll go back to, Randy, what you mentioned about Larry as a resource, and one of the things that my dad always loved about Larry and his show is that every show that Larry does, there's a genuine interest. And not only the subject, but sort of allowing people to talk, allowing the stories to come out. And I think one reason that my dad loved Larry's show so much is that's exactly the way he approached, whether it was not listening in, he would let people talk and allow them to tell their stories rather than trying to steer their story to something that he wanted it to be. So I agree with that. In terms of the review about Raw, I would say, I'm not sure if August wrote that review, or it'd be interesting to try to track that down. I think there, from my perspective, and of course, I'm his son, so I'm a little biased in terms of the book, and I'm not a literary critic, but I think it is raw in some ways. It's not a happy book by any means. As I said earlier, there's an inevitability that this life is ending. The commercial fishing life is ending. There's a lot of conflicts that aren't resolved always in a good way, and there's a lot of pain that's felt. So I think in that sense, there's a real rawness. And I think from my perspective, that's actually a real compliment, because I think it ties into the difficult, life that a lot of these commercial fishermen had on Lake Michigan. Some of the language also was a little bit raw. One of the funniest stories my dad told me about was after Fisherman's Beach was re-released in 1990 and was sent around to a bunch of bookstores, he got... A small bookstore up in Two Rivers actually was run by a woman whose family, her husband, had been a commercial fisherman. And she returned the books with a letter of complaint saying that the language used by the characters in the book and some of the things that they did in the book were clearly not the kind of things that her sons or her father would have done, which alone is kind of a funny letter. But it's even funnier that my dad knew the family, and he's like... There's no doubt that kind of language was definitely used, although probably not in the home. So my guess is that raw quote in terms of the book review was probably a real compliment, and I think my dad would have been happy about that.
And in the e-release, there is some sort of an afterword kind of section that I believe has something that August Derleth might have written about the book.
Yeah, I know. I quoted his blurb or a blurb in my foreword, a very flattering, just a couple of sentences from But yeah, there's a thing by August Ehrlich that's an ebook supplement. I think a guy named James P. Roberts wrote, there's a profile of called The Quiet World of George Mikhelic that is in there. It's one of the neat things, I think, about these ebooks now. I'm an old kind of holdout for the most part. I like to hold the book, but my goodness, not just the reissue, which is wonderful, but all these additional things. And there is something by Derleth, which I have to admit I haven't read yet. And as Vince alluded to, though, there's almost a sense of a passing of the baton there. Because George did admire Derleth, but boy, he sure held up that ideal pretty well himself.
Yeah. Randy, hang on. Would you like a copy of the book?
Oh, you betcha.
I'm going to put you on hold, and Judith will get back to you, okay?
Your gentleman, thank you.
All right, I think I've got him on hold. you sometimes you never, you know, let's see, I'm going to do it again. There, now I think I've got him. Lynn in Lake Forest, Illinois. Hi, thank you for calling.
Mary. Oh, thank you so much, and thank you for this show. I remember the show North Country Notebook on Wisconsin Public Radio. Mm-hmm.
It was wonderful.
It was just a wonderful show. And I remember an episode called The Fish Car. And it was one of the funniest ones I've ever heard. And I don't know where it might be written down, if it is at all. But it was, aside from the radio show. But it was wonderful. And that was one thing we really looked forward to hearing when we would drive north into Wisconsin and have Wisconsin Public Radio on at night. And it was, I cannot tell you how much enjoyment. And we do have North Country Notebook. But at any rate, just wanted to say, you know, we really enjoyed listening to that show, mm-hmm. That episode in particular. And we thank you for this show.
Oh, well, Lynn, thank you so much. Comment, Vincent?
Sure. I mean, one of the interesting things about North Country Notebook that he did for Wisconsin Public Radio was a half-hour show, and what he would do is he'd get music on CDs that were given to him for quite a while. Rick Murphy produced them, and Rick Murphy was a wonderful radio personality who recently passed away. But he and my dad worked really well together, and what they would do is they'd get the music, and my dad would have the writing in front of him, and then he would be able to, you know, bring the music up and down. But he would really, even though he had it written down, he would ad-lib this half-hour show. Now, The Fish Car, I believe I remember that one. I'm almost positive was inspired by Dinah Mansfield, the former coach of the Wisconsin Badger baseball team. And when I was younger, we used to go up to Dinah Mansfield's cabins at Nelson Lake up near Manitowish Waters every year. And my dad and I would go fishing with Diney sometimes, and he had this old station wagon that was, I mean, I was probably, you know, 8 or 9 at the time, and I had a hard time getting into it because Diney had so much stuff in the back. He had, you know, nets, he had waders, every type of lure, extra oars, oarlocks, everything that you would need to go fishing. And we'd go down these, you know, these dusky trails to these lakes that I, you know, that no one knew about, and go fishing with Diney. And so, I think that was the inspiration for the Fish Car episode.
Yeah, I was glad that the caller brought up George's humor.
Yeah,
because it was a big part of who he was, I think, and his writing. And it's not very—it's the hardest thing in the world to do well, you know, to write humor. And he had this marvelous character named Steady Eddie, of course, who was based on a real guy, Ed Tila, here in Madison. Who I think was sort of George's alter ego, too, in a way.
Right.
When he had a funny line to deliver, he'd give it to Steady Eddie.
Right, right. Steady Eddie ran a bait shop, Ed Teela's bait shop, on Blair Street for many years. And it was actually during the strike of 1977, my dad kind of realized his career goal, or really one of his dream jobs, was to become the outdoor writer for the Capital Times. And he quit his radio job. And this was a chance to sort of be the writer that he wanted to be, you know, a major paper outdoor writer. And then 5 months later, they went on strike on October 1st, 1977. And one of the things that he did then is the newspaper that the strikers put out was first a weekly called the Madison Press Connection, and then became a daily. And my dad wrote a couple columns. One of them was North Country Notebook, and the other one was Papa Hambone's Fishing Report. And my dad would go and visit Ed Teela, to Steady Eddie's, and then I thought he'd also go up to Captain Jack's fish shop at the time. And he just started hanging around Ed, and Ed was, a real character. And so you're exactly right. My dad would put words in, and I remember Ed was interviewed once, and he said, yeah, George just writes down the things that I think, even though I don't say them out loud. But Steady Eddie really became sort of a, the alter ego, a regular character in that North Country Notebook column that he did for the Isthmus for years.
George did a Madison Magazine column. I reference it in my foreword to the novel.
Yeah.
That was just very funny. And he and Steady Eddie and a great old newspaper reporter named Frank Custer were at the last night of a Madison downtown bar called the 400. And they're kind of looking around, and it's solemn, and nobody's there. And Frank Custer, says, I don't understand why this bar's closing. Why aren't people here? Why aren't they upset? Steady Eddie says, that's right. Just let them close as school, and people show up in droves.
That was a great line, by the way. I love that. Oh, Judith tells me that our books are all gone. And he still had Randy, who was, I think, would have been the first recipient, but his name is not up here.
Larry, I have no problem getting more books to you to give away.
We'll find one more for Randy, who's on line one, who is the person I put on hold to give him a book. We'll take care of that. So, Randy, I think you're still there. Hold on. And then along with Randy, Michelle in Prairie du Sac, and Bob and Margaret in Madison, and Bob in Algoma. So we've got all those books gone, and I appreciate that. You know what? I haven't done yet. Here we had a comment about Last Letters from Stalingrad, and I said, oh, yeah, we'll play. We've got a little piece of George reading one of the Stalingrad letters. And so I'm going to play that. I'm going to play that right now.
This will be my last letter for a long time, perhaps forever. It will be taken along by a friend who has to go to the airfield because it is said that tomorrow the last plane will fly out of the pocket. The situation has become untenable. The Russians are within 3 kilometers of our last airfield, and once this is lost, not a mouse will get out, not to mention me. Of course, hundreds of thousands of others won't get out either, but it is small comfort to have shared your destruction with others.
Wow. That was very, very powerful reading. And Doug, did you have a chance to listen to those?
You know, I didn't, but I got to tell you, Larry, whenever I reference George in a column, which I've done many times over the years, I'll hear from people mentioning that feature. And Vince may know, I think he did it around the holidays.
It was always
at
Christmas time.
Right.
Yeah, I listened to it quite a few years in a row, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, he basically would do it for about 2 weeks beforehand.
It had a profound effect on people. And I don't know where you got that clip.
Actually, I think it was online. It might have been...
Yeah, I know people are... If there was any way of putting a CD or something together, that would be another very worthwhile project.
Yeah. Joe in Eagle River said a couple years ago he hooked up with Rick Murphy, and Rick was trying to put together transfer the North Country Notebook and the letters from Stalingrad to make it more accessible in the digital format. And Rick died before that could really be completed. And Vince, you actually were giving Rick... Yeah,
right. And I'm working with someone right now who's very gracefully stepped in, and we're working on trying to get a lot of those digitized. And we'd love to work with Wisconsin Public Radio to get some of those on, if possible.
It would be wonderful.
But you're right, Doug and Larry, that it's funny with a name like Vukelic. You know, people tend to ask me either I know your sisters because I have all my sisters, or else I know your mother. And now it's starting to, a lot of times will be people, I know your father. And it's interesting where they'll know him from, whether it's the Wisconsin Public Radio North Country Notebook tapes, or, maybe I remember Last Letters from Stalingrad, or I remember reading his column, and it's very interesting. But you're right, Last Letters is very often mentioned, and how profoundly that affected people. I think it was sort of the perfect way, at least for my family. I remember we would sit around in the living room, and my dad, you know, we'd kind of cozy up on cold winter nights and listen to that. And even as a young boy, I didn't necessarily understand all the letters, but just the way he read it just made you feel what was in them. And it was just a wonderful thing that he did.
Yeah. It was amazing because these weren't recorded, as you said earlier. I mean, just did them live. And,
right.
And without a mistake and with a feeling.
Exactly. And I think one of the wonderful things about you had a clip of his voice, and he's got that great radio voice, which Rick Murphy could imitate better than anyone. But the great thing about when you listen to it is that how he would tie in the music, and there would be German folk songs or, you know, Russian folk songs or you know, all these songs that would set the stage so much more effectively than just his voice. And you would put the combination of that wonderful voice along with the music. It was just powerful.
Margaret in Madison, let's hear from you. Thanks for calling.
Oh, hi. Well, thanks for taking my call. I wish my dad could be alive to hear this tribute to him, because he worked for a little while with George at the Cap Times and just thought so highly of him and his writing abilities. But I wanted to say I have this saying that I associate with him, but I don't know if he ever said it, and it was something to the effect of, don't sweat the small stuff, and it's all small stuff.
Yeah, he would, on his radio show at times, he would, you know, get into that deep voice, and he said, there are two things to remember down here on the planet, Paizan. Thing number one is, don't sweat the small stuff. Thing number two is, down here on the planet, it's all small stuff.
Mm.
And so that's, I mean, it's a phrase that's been used by many different people, but the way he said it was definitely his own.
I can remember him saying it, as a matter of fact. Thank you, Margaret, for bringing that back up. You know, Wisconsin folk singer David H.B. Drake wrote to share that he wrote a song called Fisherman's Beach on his CD of the same name that was inspired by the novel.
How cool.
Yeah, and David H.B. Drake is a wonderful folk singer and another one of those great resources we have in Wisconsin. I've seen him several times, and I know my dad was a fan of his as well. So thank you for that, David.
Yeah, and I wanted to go back to the publisher, it was Cambridge.
I think it's Cambridge Book Review Press, Bob Wake. And Doug is right. I mean, it was interesting. What had happened is Doug or Bob had found these books, the remaindered books from the university bookstore, and he took a picture of them and ended up buying them all because he just said this is the kind of book that shouldn't be, you know, remaindered. And then he called me up. I think he got my name from the internet. And he called me up and he said that he wanted permission to sell them. And I said, well, you actually don't need anything from us because, you know, they've been sold. Yeah. And he said, well, the reason I'm doing that is I want to do it right. I want to involve the family, but I also have an ulterior motive. Yeah. And I want to put out an ebook. And so it's really Bob, his motivation and his expertise and his, you know, just really kindness for doing this. And of course, it's been wonderful just to have, again, a different generation of people that are going to read it. And what's interesting is hearing you, Larry, and you, Doug, talk about that you never read it in the first time. So even though there are many people who are very aware of many aspects of Dad's career, weren't even aware that he had a novel out. And so I think Bob's really done a great service, and I really appreciate that.
I don't remember him ever. He never mentioned it to me.
Yeah.
We always had plenty of things to talk about, I guess. And we always had such wonderful conversations. He never brought it up with you either, did he?
No, but I guess we made a point earlier about what makes, you know, we're talking about radio hosts and things, and what made George, I think, such an engaging companion was he was an interesting guy, but he was interested, if you get what I'm saying. He wanted to know more about you, and I think that was a key to his journalism and his radio work.
And with that, unfortunately, we got to close. We can get copies of this of the book. There's certainly the e-book available on
Definitely. I'm not sure if Bob has one on his Cambridge Book Review Press website. Also, I think they're available on Amazon.com.
Vince Vukalik and Doug Moe, thank you for listening. Stay with us.